Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a new segment on our podcast called To the Table, in which we bring a movie to the table, literally, figuratively, whatever you want to put it. With me, I have a Peter Martinez, frequent flyer on Red Spotlight Airlines. How are you doing?
Yeah, I think
today,
I need
sir?
To get my card punched. I'm due for a free flight.
Yes.
Due for one.
Hopefully, you're not Asian.
What?
Delta Airlines.
That's right.
Delta Airlines.
That is right.
Anyway. This is a podcast in which we bring a movie to the table and we review it, something that we've never seen or thoroughly seen or anything like that. And then we both, it's a two-person podcast, and two people get, each individual person gets 30 minutes per film.
Well, how we're doing it is we each bring a film that we want the other one to see. And we just to gauge, you know, their general reactions, and we each discuss why we wanted this other person to see this film, and what each of us personally feel about the film.
Yes,
I think it's sort of an exercise to get out of our comfort zone as far as films go, because I think even though we all love the big blockbusters and stuff like that, there are certain films I watch that, you know, Kyle doesn't watch, and
there's certain movies that I watch that Peter doesn't watch, or Alexis,
especially Alexis.
Alexis is comfortably safe in the safe zone, so I think this will be a great experience for us. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, we'll have a lot of movies to talk about. This podcast, we're going to be talking about two movies. We have a 2006 film called Casino Royale. Mm-hmm. Daniel Craig's first outing as James Bond, which I had Peter watch, and Peter had me watch the 2015 cult classic The Witch, which has like nobody other than Sansa's aunt.
What's
Crazy
her name?
Aunt from Game of Thrones.
No, that actress who plays the girl is like she's on the up and up.
She was the one. Another movie I know that she's in is Vampire Academy, but that's it.
She was in what was the last film she was in?
She must not be that up
no,
and
no,
up.
No. I know the film. I know because I like the film. It came out this year.
Yeah.
Ooh, it's on the tip of my tongue. It's on the Split. Split.
Oh, she was
Split.
In Split.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
was she like the main...
yes, she was the main girl that you were following. Yes.
All right.
And she's an amazing actress. So I'll throw that out there right now.
All right.
You will know her name in...
Anya.
Sure, in a year.
Her name is Anya something.
Yeah.
That's her name. But anyway, here we begin. Peter.
Yes.
Tell me.
The Witch.
Why did you want me to watch The Witch?
Okay, this film has basically become a running joke in our group of friends because, and yes, it's very obvious who inspired it, Mr. and Mrs. Nettie and Eric. They,
yeah. Oh, by the way, speaking of Nettie, go check out our interview with her.
Yeah.
Nettie Sings the Blues, number 58. so anyway,
yeah.
Continue.
This is a film that I really, really liked when it came out. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was one of the best films I saw that year.
Yeah.
And I want to get this out of the way right now because I'm not angry. I'm not like throwing shade at Nettie or Eric.
When we had that discussion,
there was alcohol involved. It was very heated. Early morning.
It was heated.
No, but I want to make clear.
We were pretty much guns blazing at 2 o'clock in the morning discussing.
A table may have flipped or a chair.
Yeah.
The point is, I really respect their opinion. That's the only reason why I would, you know, become heated in argument with them about the film. And they, not only do they not like it, they loathe it. They really hate the film.
They gave Hocus Pocus more credence
as far as witches go. So my thing was like, I thought I had like a pretty
solid
understanding, but I'm like, okay, you know, they're kind of, they're coming at it from a different angle. either I was not able to see or I just don't see. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you and Alexis, you hadn't seen this film, but obviously you would be the most open to seeing this. So I was like, yeah. I need another set of eyes on this. Maybe I'm seeing this the wrong way. Maybe we just have completely different tastes. And I just find it generally interesting.
Yeah.
When we as people like clash with films like that, like, I don't know.
It's an interesting dynamic, yes, to say the least.
It's a lot of fun. I'll put it that way. So what did you think?
Okay. I could clearly see both sides. I see
taking the middle road here.
I see both sides. If you're expecting like this to be like a full throttle horror film, don't go in with that expectation at all. That kind of helped me out watching the movie along the way. I view it as more of a psychological thriller more than anything.
Yeah.
The way I see it is that you see this family's slow descent into madness.
Hell,
whatever you want to call it. Yes. You have this girl, and she's kind of like the ugly duckling of the family. In terms of like her dynamic with her mom, her mom hates her, and she has these other siblings. One of her siblings has the hots for her, and you have.
Hey, we've been watching a lot of Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
you should be okay with it.
and then, damn it, Cersei. Another thing that there's these two twins, of yes. course. If you wanna have a scary antic thing, you add in twins in there. Thank you, Kubrick, for that. And you compared it to The Shining.
Yes.
You know, when you were introducing this film to me, and I think yes, it is a slow burn until okay. like. Until shit actually gets going.
Yeah.
But when the shit gets going, you're like, fucking shit, this is cool. First of all, I give a lot of credence to the actress, Anya, whatever her name is, the girl who plays Thomason in there. And she, like, you get her innocent side, but then you're like questioning, wait, did she really do it, you know? And you know, all these opposing sides are coming at her, and you get a little bit of remorse from her dad, which I don't know who played her dad, but he does look like he's part of that time period.
Yeah,
which is pretty cool.
I love his voice too.
Very gruff, like, yeah. That he kind of puts the hound to shame in Game of Thrones. So I don't know. Like, there's a very little music going on, but what you hear is like a slow build of a violin.
Yes.
And then the folk music going around, it really sets a tone for an atmosphere that I was like, that I was unprepared for, you know? And that was really cool, getting this kind of folk like essence to it, and it really threw you back in time. You went into your TARDIS and you went back in time and you saw shit go down.
Imagine if Doctor Who just came out at the end.
Yeah, that was
like, what the?
And apparently the goat, there's a goat in it, and apparently yes,
the goat
is Satan at the end.
Aren't all goats?
Yes. and it was like the goat did it, and there were a couple of oh shit moments. I was like, oh crap. First of all, when the witch was inside, I think it was like eating one of the white goat. Well, the witch was in. Okay, remember when the dad he brought Thomason and the twins, and they locked them up in the shed.
Yes,
and then they find that the twins wake up, and Thomason wakes up, and they see that witch eating the goat.
Yeah.
And she turns around and does the whole Wicked Witch of the West thing, like the and then the kids are like, ah, and I'm like, oh shit, that's pretty scary. When the dad wakes up, and you see a little hole on her the mom's chest, because she hallucinates that her son Caleb, who just succumbed to a demon possession, you see him, and then you see the baby who goes missing in the beginning of the movie, and she's hallucinating that that she's breastfeeding the baby, but it's really just a raven pecking at her chest, and then another moment that the dad wakes up, and the goat just headbutts him. headbutts him and kills him on sight. And it was like, the goat does a little dance. I laughed. but it was ridiculous, like just the anger and aggression that the dad had, the conviction, mm-hmm. I guess you could say. It was pretty it was pretty funny, actually. So I was like, okay, I took little notches of like the serious tone kind of knocked off. The part where Satan is having Thomason sign her name in his book. Oh, when he appears as himself. Yeah, mm-hmm. That was genuinely creepy. Like, you don't know, just a voice. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost sultry, you know?
Well, I think the director had come out and asked, like, well, what does the devil look like or whatever? And he had said something along the lines of, like, the most beautiful thing you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And it's like, so, yeah, I found that very... I loved that scene.
Yeah, and then I like how he has, like, spurs.
Yeah.
He has spurs, and it's pretty cool. It's like a cowboy, you know, walking in. It's pretty cool. Like, the design is had, like, the Quaker hat. He had the mm-hmm. Quaker hat on, but he, like, wore, like, a leather thing on. And it was a pretty cool. The actress who played Thomason, I have not seen Split. Mm-hmm. I heard great things about it, and I want to see it for a couple of reasons, because of M. Night Shyamalan and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But this adds to me wanting to watch Split. And I think that she was a fantastic actress. Mm-hmm. I really love the language.
Isn't it great?
I really love the language in which that they spoke, like, thy sister, like, just the thys and thous.
Honestly, that them going for that wouldn't have worked if they didn't have amazing actors and actresses.
Yeah, like, even the kid actors were great.
The twins, I thought they were amazing.
Yeah, like, the twins.
They're great kid actors and actresses.
I really felt like she was, like, the girl twin. Mm-hmm. I really felt like she was gonna break down and, like, start yelling and sobbing when Thomason was like, oh, I signed the devil's book and mm-hmm. all that. And I was like, oh my God, you know, like, don't cry, kid. Cause I know that if the mom found out that, Thomason's on her way to hell already, yeah. on that road. So, there was a lot of tension. Mm-hmm. But it was like a slow, like, you're slowly watching somebody tune a guitar, mm-hmm. and you're just waiting for it to snap, and that's the whole movie in a nutshell.
What are your negatives?
Because
you said you were kind of in the middle, like, you kind of understood where both of us were coming from.
Because of the slow build, mm-hmm. because of the slow build, it is both a positive and a negative, mm-hmm. because you are waiting for that oh shit. All the oh shit moments to happen, and then you feel I find the mother's hatred for her daughter very very uncomfortable.
That's kind of the point, though.
I know, but it's
like one of the quotes from the trailers from a reviewer is something of it's like along the lines of, you feel like you are watching something that you're not supposed to. And I thought, like, that's a really great way to put it. Like, that's the way the film is. Like, there's just massive sense of uneasiness throughout the entire film. It's not necessarily scary. You just feel uneasy. Like, you just feel icky to act like a 5-year-old. You feel icky for just watching this. Like, just seeing this family tear apart and watch sin and a different sin tear apart each of them individually.
Also, in terms of, like, editing and cutting and all that stuff from an editor's perspective, mm-hmm. I think that they should have cut the movie, started the movie off when Thomason is on her knees praying.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I could have gotten the sense that they were banished and they did shit, and you could clearly see a bunch of their mannerisms in which got them expelled from the little tribe that they had. So I think that you could have cut out the opening scene of them in town, mm-hmm. and just start from when she's on her knees praying. But that's just me.
No, I can see that.
I
like it just because it's sort of this parallel of, like, that town was sort of their Eden.
Yeah.
And they're banished for it for, you know, their... what they were accused of sinly ways, and then their sinly ways tears them apart and tears the has the devil tear them apart.
And he kind of the dad kind of alluded to that in the in the first place when he was like when they went hunting, him and Caleb, the little boy, he was like, we have escaped paradise or something like that, and we are nothing but Abraham's children now. That was nice little forte thing going on. But yeah, I think that the chemistry between all the actors, like, you get that this is a highly, highly dysfunctional family.
Yeah.
And they've been in the kind of rubber band has been trying to snap for years.
Yeah.
At this point. And that's why I have a little nitpick of the beginning, because you could already tell that, this family, they're good. They have, like, good nature to them, but you could feel that, you know, yeah, the town, you're seeing the reason why the town banished them in the first place, you know, through their actions, you know, and the way that they act and all that stuff. Like, the mom's kind of nutty, the dad is kind of unorthodox in the way he prepares himself. So I think that, if you would have cut that beginning part out, I don't think you would have missed anything. But that's just, I guess that's what you call the minor nitpick at most. I thought the rest of the film, my God, it was like, and I keep on saying this, this is the guitar string trying to break and snap. And then when it does snap, when she does meet the coven of witches, and she's like flying and she's hallucinating and shit like that. And I'm like, okay, and credits.
What would you have done if they had started singing, "I Put a Spell on You"?
I that would have been just as ridiculous as the headbutting scene.
All of a sudden, they act like the witches from
out of the corner. Bette Midler comes out.
I put a spell on you,
and I am. Or have like a folky version. I put a spell.
I. For me, the best way to describe it is almost like a horror film for the people during that time.
Yeah, because
it's very much all of their personal fears, the things, their
that
worst
they,
possible things
that they deemed as bad.
You know how easy it is to turn to sin, and how easy it is to fall out of God's grace and go to hell.
Yeah,
and you just see how it tears this family apart slowly. And you know the witch. I guess it's a bit misleading to call it the witch, because the witch is really the most non-consequential thing in the whole film. It's really
corn.
Corn does play its part.
We're at the corn.
I love his voice. And corn. No. But
like, he doesn't have like a smoker's voice.
Yes,
it's like
it's
some.
Just,
like he's like.
He should do voiceover.
He's knee deep in bourbon.
Yeah.
And I love when he's like sobbing and shit like that. Like the. Like he's almost choking. I don't know. It's something. It's great.
I think. Even if you think the film is really bad, and like me and you do know people, Nettie and Eric, think that it's really bad. I can see that. Sort of the same way. I personally feel. What's the new movie? Christopher Nolan's
Dunkirk.
It's not my taste. I guess I understand why so many people love it, and I always have to commend. The amazing
cinematography, the directing
yeah. is just amazingly well, but maybe it's just something that just doesn't align with me. And I can totally see
it could
that
be probably me. Lack of characters, which this one
thought the characters were wonderful.
Yeah, the characters like I said before, Thomasin, she was great. The mom, like her acting is very frantic. I liked it. Like when she was in the corner praying, you know, and she, and you get the sense that she's been praying all night, you know.
And the way like she's like, my baby's in hell,
yeah,
because she wasn't baptized or something like that.
Yeah, just stuff like that, and you get a sense. It's really a character piece on people, not people in the movie, but people back then
of that time of that religion.
Yeah, like their mindsets. Like the dad, one of the reasons why he got kicked out of the whole tribe thing, was because he questioned the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And that is pretty, and that's a pretty much a taboo at the time.
Yes.
You know, so, what drew you to the film?
I genuinely just really like horror films, and it was getting a lot of buzz, and I was watching, and then I would see, I saw trailers, and I'm like, oh, this looks great, because I don't know if you ever saw the trailer for it, but it looks really unnerving. I'm like, and you could tell just from the trailers, like, this looks very, like, a very well-made film. I thought it would be up my alley, and then...
And it was.
It was, and beforehand, I didn't even know that it wasn't really going to be a straight-up horror film. I think I had heard something a little bit like that, but I didn't go in with that mindset. I went with the mindset like, oh, this is a witch horror film. Uh-huh. But when I got something different, it did throw me off for a bit, because I'm like, where's this going? But I was never bored, I guess. Like, I was always intrigued. And like you said, it's that constant wire being turned. So I was always with it. And it, at the end of the day, I'm like, this is unique. And I like it.
I like it.
To add another funny moment, though, that damn rabbit.
Yeah, just like looking at you into your soul. That looked like that animated movie that like it advertised for kids, but it's not really. I also another thing I like, much like a Schindler's List.
Mm-hmm.
I like the color grading of the movie.
Yeah,
that was great. It was pretty much devoid of color.
Mm-hmm. But it wasn't black and white.
It
was just very.
But until it got to like into like the witch stuff, where it really showed the reds. And when it showed, like, the fire, when the fire was being shown, and that was the only lighting, I looked up on Wikipedia, and I was, like, doing the research of this thing, and, it, like, apparently the director wanted to go all natural lighting, and even at the night scenes, they only used the candles, and that's what they
shot. And I think that really pays off. Yeah. I think it looks really beautiful because of that.
It really adds to something because, yeah, you could have had, like, some sort of Hollywood budget or anything like that.
To me, it always takes me out, like if it's supposed to be set in the during that time and they're going really straight with it, and you can obviously tell there's, like, headlights.
Studio lighting
on both sides, and it's,
very
But yet, there's only a candle, like, in the corner, but it's the whole room's bright.
Yeah, more like Antony and Cleopatra or some shit like that. I don't know. It was a really cool scene. Also, another thing is that I saw that really fascinates me is that they went to, like, the most remote place ever. Even enough to where they had to have, like, I saw in the credits, like, they had to have a medic right there because town was so far away from their location shoot. So that right there adds a little bit more of secludedness. And it really did feel secluded where they were. And that kind of, like, up the ante of what it was. I think a lot of things were great about it. I really, the only complaint I have is really just the beginning, where they decided to begin the movie.
Where the movie starts?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was cool seeing Indians in there, Native Americans.
They're all interacting.
In the beginning, when they were leaving town,
that's another, like, signifier that it portrayed Eden, because it was these different people living in harmony, in peace.
And versus the family, and they were not living in harmony at all.
No. I guess my final thoughts about this is, I totally get people that see this film differently. Like I said, this is a film, and at the end of the day, I actually kind of like that, because I like dissenting opinions, and because that means you actually really get to talk about it and really understand film more.
It was definitely a film to digest.
Yeah.
You know, after that, I had to take a walk. I'm like,
the woods.
I have to, no, fuck that. Like, oh, we don't live near the woods. But yeah. I really felt that. If I watched this while I was camping in Mammoth, oh my god, that would have creeped the hell out of me. I would have been like, oh my god, is there a witch here? I would have been like, in the name of the Padre, or something. I definitely recommend this, not for the typical horror film goer,
mm-hmm.
but I do recommend this to a artsy, an arty film.
You arty farts.
Yeah, arty farts, pretty much. I'm a loss of words. You know, I think that I've said all the things. The acting is really good and all that stuff. So, that
seems to wrap it up.
Yeah, that seems to wrap it up. Okay.
Well, this is my turn.
Yeah.
It's my turn now. Mr. Lyra?
Yeah?
Why did you recommend me Casino Royale?
I recommend... Okay, right now I'm kind of like in a Bond mode right now.
A Bond binge?
A Bond binge right now, and I'm completely like, wow, because...
I've been...
Oh, wow. I've been in love with this series for a while now, ever since I saw Casino Royale in the theaters, and that pretty much kickstarted my passion for the Bond franchise. I'm like, okay, that was cool. I gotta see the rest. And I watched Sean Connery's era. I saw...
So you started with
Casino Royale.
Oh, okay.
And then I went back. I was like, okay, I gotta watch everything.
That's
else.
One of the first times that you've done that with certain series.
Yeah, and I saw Casino Royale. Well, the thing is that Casino Royale serves as, like, a reboot of the franchise. Yeah. Like, it doesn't serve in the same continuity as the Sean Connery, Roger Moore, George Lazenby, whatever movies. Yeah, so I fell in love with this series because of Casino Royale, and I think it was a great introduction to the Bond franchise for me. You have Daniel Craig, and he is very... very loose, and he is he's like this loose, kind of loose cannon, will kind of do anything. He's young, and you get a young Bond, you know. You Sean Connery, he was almost to his 40s, into his 40s when he first did Dr. No. So you get this young Bond, and then the character interactions are great. I think that this is a great starting off point for any Bond aficionado. It is my favorite James Bond movie of all time because there was a lot of things, like, they kind of play off the cliches of the James Bond universe. It is very secluded from the James Bond universe as well, because it doesn't have, like, Q, Moneypenny, or anybody else like that. Much like Quantum of Solace, which is, I don't consider it a Bond movie, I consider it a Jason Bourne movie, but that's a that's a discussion for another time.
That's another thing, yeah.
So, I don't know. I just really wanted you to see it because you've only seen, like, bits of it. And
yeah. Well, where I started, I saw, like, the first beginning bits back when we still had a movie rental store here where we live. And I remember at the time my dad had rented it, and I woke up early. I can't remember how old I was, but I was a kid. And I was like, oh, James Bond. I know what James Bond is. That's cool.
Yeah.
And I popped it in. And I fell asleep. So then when I woke up, I'm like, this ain't doing it for me. So I just, I popped it back out. And that's all I really saw of it. but I did go on to see Quantum of Solace, Skyfall, and Spectre. Mm-hmm. And Quantum of Solace, I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
But I've forgotten a lot of the film. I really have. I just remember being like, okay, that was a movie. But I really like Skyfall, and, you know, I guess I'm one of those guys. I really like Spectre.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay.
Don't be ashamed of liking Spectre.
Loud and
sir.
Proud.
Loud and proud.
So I obviously knew why you recommended this movie to me, and a lot of people consider this to be the best James Bond film. Mm-hmm. And that's saying something for a franchise that's 24 films deep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, okay.
At the time, it was 21 films deep.
But people say that today, you know, after having seen those films. Some people say Skyfall.
I think Skyfall is a great movie, mm-hmm. but I think it's definitely an overrated Bond film.
I wasn't blown away.
A lot of great things happen in it.
I thought it was definitely a really good movie, but mm-hmm. I was surprised, like, people are like, incredible.
And Wonder
like,
Woman level
Wonder Woman
stuff.
Love.
So.
Yes.
What did you think of Casino Royale?
What did I think of Casino Royale? Okay.
Yeah.
My initial impressions were like, wow, this is really different than what I expected. because I'll be honest, it didn't feel like a Bond film to me. Or what I, in my head, what I have is...
Yeah, you had, like, the fancy, flashy cars, yes. And then you had Bond, like, shaking off, sir, which I kind of made fun of in that.
But I guess the biggest thing that's so surprising to me is how small the movie is. Mm. It's actually a really small film.
A lot of the stuff was practical effects. Only time they used CG was at the end. A sequence with the when the building was sinking into the Venice, and then when they do like stunt works like jumping back or anything like that, they had like strings and they removed that with CG. Other than that, no CG whatsoever.
And you can tell. I think all the stunts were really incredibly well done, but I more low key. I think when I say that, I mean more story wise. Because most James Bond films, it's like Bond. The world is in peril. You must save us. Yeah. And then he goes everywhere, the exploding buildings everywhere. But here it's just a very, very small mission.
It's intimate.
It's just like this, the big bad isn't like, I will destroy you, James Bond. He's a guy who's out on his luck. You know, if he doesn't win this card game, he's dead. So you're not even trying to go in and kill him or bring him in. You just have to beat him in the card game. So that he's forced to come in to MI6.
Yeah, as protection.
As protection. And I'm like, that's really interesting. I found that really interesting because, like, that's not something I would think of as this, like, big blockbuster spy film. It's like, you gotta play cards.
That's it.
And I had heard some people thought they felt the film was a little bit boring because of the card playing. And I thought I might be that way. Because I do not know how to play cards.
Yeah.
I'll tell you to go fish all day, but anything past that...
You're lost.
Maybe 21, but, like, yeah, I'm kind of lost. But I thought they were done really well. Like, I got the gist of the card game. I thought they were shot very tensely. I also felt that... who directed it? Because I thought the director...
Martin Campbell.
Was really well done. It had... A life of its own, I thought.
He did, like, Finding Neverland, and he also did another James Bond movie called GoldenEye, which is also another movie that's considered, like, one of the best.
Yeah, that's one of the top tier, so I've heard. I'll see all of them.
Coming soon to the table.
The next 24 episodes are all James Bond films.
I wouldn't be mine. Anyway, continue.
No. I thought the music was really well done. And
David Arnold.
I'm used to what James Bond music should sound like.
Yeah.
And even with knowing what that is, I felt it really stood out. Mm-hmm. The first, I do have to say though, the first third or first half before he gets to the card game, I almost feel like I get no character from James Bond. He's just sort of this guy. He's too stoic. He says like maybe two or three words. You can tell like he's someone who plays by his own rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's clear. But it's like as a character, you don't get much of him. It isn't until he meets up with Eva Green's character where you really start to peel back the layers. And
she's my favorite Bond girl.
First of all, Eva Green is freaking amazing.
Yeah, she is.
I love her to death. She's great. She's a great actress.
Like that first interaction between Bond and Vesper, character.
Yeah, that's her name, Vesper.
She pretty much sits down and puts him in his place, and she's like, I'm the money. And then he's like, every penny of it. And, you know, on tete with each other. And their chemistry is on fire.
They have amazing chemistry. And I think that really goes a long way. And I totally understand why you see her as your favorite Bond girl. Because from the films I've seen, the Bond girls haven't really stood out too much. And I feel this one
stood out. That's pretty much like the standard, you know, Bond girl, the ones that you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
But this one really, really set the tone. I mean, there's a couple of Bond girls that come to mind, like Ursula Andress. She's Honey Rider from Dr. No. Pussy Galore. She's one from Goldfinger. And just like all these other ones.
What about a lady... Othelia?
Teresa. That's her name in Honor Majesty's Secret Service. Lady Olenna Tyrell.
Yes.
Yeah, that's from Honor Majesty's Service. She was a great one. She didn't take any shit from Bond.
She never has her entire career.
Yeah, that's great. But I think, what did you think Mads Mikkelsen as Le Chief?
I really liked this villain because it, again, like you said, they took what you usually see from a James Bond film and they twisted it a bit. Mm-hmm. And like, this isn't a villain who he knows what he's got friends everywhere. He's got millions of henchmen.
Yeah.
And he's got his own secret base and he's going to take down Bond. Like, I will get you, Bond.
I will throw the laser from the sky.
A freaking laser.
Got freaking sharks with freaking lasers on top of the freaking heads.
He was not a Dr. Evil. He's very much like, this is a guy who obviously loves poker, but he is in the shits. You know, he's ready to lose everything. If he doesn't play this poker game, you know, it's done for him. And I thought that was a really interesting dynamic. It's not like we're trying to take each other down. It's I'm just trying to survive in this criminal world. And James Bond, I just have to stop you enough to bring you in to get stuff that you know about worse guys. Mm-hmm. So it really is sort of like it does feel like James Bond's first mission.
And for the first time in the Bond series, you see him fail at everything.
Yeah.
Bond loses everything. The only time he's actually had a success in the movie was when he captures Mr. White at the end. Mm-hmm. Because his main objective was to stop Le Chiffre from getting the money and Quantum. Or a Spectre in the wide sense of the thing. They get the money. Vesper withholds the information to her grave. Mm-hmm. The MI6 loses their money, and that was his main objective.
And he failed.
Every single movie Bond wins, mm-hmm. you know, and he gets the objective done in some shape or form, mm-hmm. but. This is the first time you see Bond failing.
And especially where the film ended, where I thought it would end it. It's like, he won, he got him. You know, he's running off with this Bond girl.
With Vesper.
But I'm like, this can't end this way because she doesn't appear next time, da-da-da-da-da. And then, like, she dies. And the way that sort of falls apart, and it's so weird the movie ends, it almost feels like it ends as, like, part one of James Bond's story because it almost feels open-ended because you don't know what the organization is. You don't know anything. And he just sort of ends capturing this guy because that leads him to more secrets, to actually know things and get closure.
Yeah.
So you end the film with not getting closure with the story, but I feel like the story was more about Bond becoming Bond than the mission
itself.
And that's
why you get a little bit of the James Bond theme throughout the movie. It's mostly Chris Cornell, rest in peace. It's mostly his theme playing, You Know My Name. Before I go into that, what did you think of the main theme of the movie?
Are you talking about when the credits in the beginning? Not a fan. Not a fan.
That was my favorite for a while.
Really?
Yeah, until I'm like, okay, let me get into like when my more mm-hmm. musical palette was more tuned. My favorite now is Nobody Does It Better from mm-hmm. The Spy Who Loved Me. But
I like when they get more like sort of cinematic sad and like, I'm talking more like Skyfall and
The Skyfall or Sam Smith.
Yeah, I like those more. And Live and Let Die, because that's just a great song, no matter
what. When you were young and your heart. That's such a great song. Paul McCartney is amazing. But anyway, you hear a little bit of the motif throughout mm-hmm. the entire, you get a little bit of that, but you never fully hear the theme until the end credits. Mm-hmm. And after he fully, you know, embraces who he is as an agent, my favorite ending of a James Bond movie is the ending of this film, where he's like, Mr. White, we need to talk. And he snipes him in the leg, and he's crawling. He's crawling. You see footsteps, and then the camera pans up, and it's Daniel Craig with the machine gun. And then he hangs up the phone, puts it in his pocket, and he says, "The name's Bond, James Bond."
And the music.
And then the music, which, by the way, is my favorite version of the theme. There's mm-hmm. many other versions of the theme, but that right here, it feels more grand, epic, and all that. Which, going back to music, David Arnold. Mm-hmm. David Arnold's score is amazing. What did you think of Vesper? The ding, 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 the piano score.
I don't think I remember anything with her.
Oh, because that's, like, one of the most, but anyway, moving on.
It's iconic.
I do
have some issues.
Okay, tell me your issues.
Okay, I really, really liked the dynamic between Vesper and Bond at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel her turn to being just completely enamored and in love with him was a bit quick. The last point where I was like, wow, I'm really loving this dynamic between them was the first time she saw someone die or him kill someone. Mm-hmm. And she was just in the shower.
Yeah.
Like just she was trying to cope with it. And, you know, Bond just came in there and sat with her and, you know, tried to comfort her. And
that was
like,
a great moment.
Great. Yeah. I was like, this is a really great moment. After that, it got a little bit too, like, oh, I love you, Bond.
Well, the thing is that, here's the thing.
Yes.
Here's the thing. I could counter that.
Okay. Counter me, bitch.
She knew her time was up.
Yes.
She knows her time is up.
Mm-hmm.
So she wants to, like, okay, you know, he likes me. I'm just going to give him what he wants. And she does.
Mm-hmm.
She does. And they enjoy. And she is genuinely happy with him. But she knows that her time is very limited with Bond. So I think that right there, I could see what your point is, but mm-hmm. that's kind of like the counter balance with that. What other negatives do you have?
I can definitely see that. I still, because I like their chemistry so much, I wish it would have kept just a little bit more like, but I can see that argument. Maybe I'm just stupid. But just, like, with the characters and stuff,
mm-hmm.
maybe it's because I watched it out of order, it gets a bit confusing to me. Because I'm like, okay, so wait, her boyfriend, they captured some secret organization, and then they need the money, and then who's Mr. White? I guess he's capturing, he killed him, and then it's not like you can't follow it completely, and maybe because I'm like, hey, that's the same guy from Spectre, and I just saw it out of order, so it's like I'm trying to like tie everything together.
Yeah.
So I'm sure if you just saw it like you saw it the right way and mm-hmm. you saw that one first, it wouldn't be as confusing. But to me, it was a little bit like, wait a minute.
The most detached from the continuity of the Bond era is Skyfall.
Yes, that's true. Because I think that was more of M's movie.
Yeah.
Than really
a Bond movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what did you think of the infamous torture scene?
Is it really infamous?
It's kind of leaning into the infamous thing because mm-hmm. of the graphic nature of it.
It almost
pushed an R rating because
really?
Of that scene. Yeah.
Well, it was kinky. What are you talking about?
The knotted rope.
Spanking him with a knotted rope. I thought it was funny. He's like, because he was like screaming and then it turned to him laughing.
Yeah.
He's like, you're going to die. And the last thing you did was like,
you're going to. The world is going to know that you died scratching my balls.
Yeah.
That's a great thing. I love, like, James Bond has always been, like, a smartass when it comes to, like, torture.
Oh, yeah.
But this one took the cake because he's like, you know, I have a little itch down there. Do you mind? Mm-hmm. And just, like, the way he, like, completely, like he has a lot of balls and you can see that.
Mm-hmm. What's left of them? They got pretty torn up.
I really like that, and that this is the first time you get like true dialogue in between Daniel Craig's character and Mads Mikkelsen, and that was a cool acting scene between them. You know, just seeing Bond, and usually when Bond is getting tortured, he's cloaked. Mm-hmm. In this one, you see Bond completely stripped.
You see him stripped several times.
Yeah. What did you think of the opening sequence?
Well, that, black I think and white. That's where I noticed the director. You know, I was like, oh, there are just some interesting shots and it's black and white. I'm like, they're really putting their stamp on it, mm-hmm. which I think is great, especially if you're doing a film series this long.
Yeah.
Which each film is almost basically sort of the same. It's more of like variations on a spy story. You know, you want to bring as much freshness to each film as you can. And I liked it. And it was very much just letting the audience know, you know, this we're starting at the beginning. We're starting over again. You know, this is a new Bond. Because immediately he's like, they only send double O's to kill, and you're not a double O. And da-da-da. And it's like psych, bitch.
And he's like, it takes two, and it cuts to the mm-hmm. to him fighting his contact. And then that was the first kill he had. And I really like the position of the gun barrel sequence,
the way it fit into the scene with him actually turning to
and
shoot.
Then you finally see who's behind the gun barrel, and mm-hmm. it was that guy.
Yeah,
and he's not in his tuxedo. He's not in his tuxedo. It's just an open shirt, a white shirt, a black sports shirt, and then jeans and some shoes, and that was it. And I pretty much sums up the uniqueness of this film, because it is Bond at his prime, mm-hmm. kind of. So I like,
well, getting to his prime.
Well, yeah, in his pre, whatever you want to call it, in his youth, mm-hmm. his youth.
I don't know if I could say this is my favorite James Bond, because I haven't seen that many to begin with.
Yeah,
but I really like that whole classic idea of James Bond in my head, where it's like shaken, not stirred.
Which they kind of—I love the joke that they did. He was like, "Would you like a drink, sir? A martini, shaken or stirred? Does it look like I give a damn?"
Yeah.
Also, one of my favorite moments of the Bond series. Mm-hmm. I'm considering all like the a lot of scene is the scene in which after he's killed the men, mm-hmm. the men that were in Uganda. And they came to threaten Lashif, and after he's killed them on the staircase, after that, you see him like completely take off his tuxedo, and then you see him with a glass of like scotch or something like that, and then you see him washing his face, you know, of the blood. Mm-hmm. You never see that in a Bond movie.
They definitely try to humanize him a lot, and you know, take. Wash away the stereotypes that you usually think of when you think of James Bond. And I think that really helped to just bring a unique spin to what people usually expect from a James Bond. Certainly what I expect, anyways, just from knowing James Bond, what he is.
Yeah.
You know, my whole life. And I really liked it. I thought it was really, really good. It's eventually, I'll get around to seeing all the James Bond, but I guarantee even after seeing the rest of the 20-some, well, by the time the next one comes out, maybe 21. But I guarantee you it'll probably still always be in my top few, even after I see the rest, because it's just really well done. I genuinely really liked it. But I will say, the next James Bond... I kind of want him to be more charismatic. I want the more of like, haha, Dolly. You know,
you want to be like Errol Flynn.
Yes.
I genuinely love this movie. What did you final thoughts on the film?
Well, those kind of were, like I said, I really, really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Even after I see the rest of the Bonds, it's probably still going to be in like my top, maybe one or two favorites. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely can see why it's your favorite. So far, what's her name is my favorite.
Vesper Lynn.
Vesper.
Yeah, and she's my favorite too. You know?
I mean, she had it at Eva Green anyways, so.
Yeah.
No, like, all around, I think it was good choice. Good choice.
Thanks. I always have good choices. What are you talking about?
Anyway.
No, literally. Anyway. That was our little discussion piece on our new segment called To the Table. check out our other projects coming up. Right now, we're going over to Alexis's house, and we're gonna be doing a Suicide Squad audio commentary. Finally, it's gonna be up probably this Sunday of the week, the first weekend of
that the Lord has made
of August. So stay tuned for that. We have a lot more stuff coming this way. Subscribe to both iTunes and YouTube to keep up to date with all our content coming out. So thank you, Peter, for joining me.
You're welcome.
Can't wait for the next to the table.
I have some ideas.
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, stay under the spotlight. Insert final theme here.